themselves. And as promised, in this 5 o'clock hour, I wanted to have a further discussion. We've been talking about it for weeks now, but I wanted to bring someone on who is in the middle of it and have a further in-depth conversation. So joining us today is Moeen Khawaja, Executive Director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Moeen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on as a guest, Al. I really appreciate it.
No, man, I appreciate you making time, and I know this is interesting times for you. I'm sure you're quite busy, and I'm glad that you can join us. And,
well, I'll tell you what, I couldn't have asked for a better song to start this off.
Yeah, how about that? I thought it was apropos. I try to have the music tie in. Before we get started, I guess I saw this piece in the Washington Post. I just wanted to read an excerpt of it, and then I'll get your impressions of it. It's by Tariq Ramadan, and it was in Sunday's Washington Post.
Right.
And it says, polls show that nearly half of Americans have unfavorable views of Islam, and fear of this faith in America is undeniable. But it's as simple as, but is it as simple as xenophobia or racism? I do not believe so. Natural and understandable concerns can be transformed into active rejection and open racism when political discourse and media coverage fan the flames for ideological, religious, or economic interests. That is what's happening in America today. The great majority of Americans do not know much about Islam, but nonetheless fear it as violent, expansionist, and alien to their society. The problem to overcome is not hatred, but ignorance. The challenge for Muslims in America is to respect the fears of ordinary people while resisting the exploitation of those fears by political parties, lobbies, sectors of the media. What do you think about that?
Well, I have to say, first of all, Tariq Ramadan is a very well-respected scholar. I have a tremendous amount of respect for him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's definitely taking this from a pragmatist approach. Now, mm-hmm. he's right that, I'm not going to believe that over half of America hates Islam or Muslims. And so where there is ignorance, where there is a lack of knowledge, we have to tackle that. Now, tackling ignorance is a long-term thing. In the short term, if ignorance leads to hatred, and in the short term, if ignorance leads to folks putting up for a vote whether Muslims have the right to worship in America, we can't respect the results of that ignorance. The results of that ignorance need to be fought against via either the law or the media or politicians. So battling ignorance is a long-term thing. It's a more proactive thing. But if that ignorance, like I said, leads to 70% of folks thinking that the Ground Zero Mosque is an insult to hallowed ground, well, that shouldn't be up for vote.
Yeah, when I read that, and during this whole thing, in fact, I keep coming up with the images of African Americans in this country in the 50s and 60s,
mm-hmm.
During the Civil Rights Movement, when they were doing things like sit-ins and marches. And when I think of this mosque argument of folks on the other side saying that, well, it's not, you know, we're not saying that the Constitution isn't the right thing to do, but, you know, is it, we believe in the Constitution, but, you know, does this make sense? Is this the right thing to do? You know, what about mm-hmm. the sensibilities of those people who might be offended by such a thing? And I keep thinking about the other side of folks when, you know, African Americans were planning sit-ins in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side of that, people were offended. People hated it.
Right.
But I think majority of folks realized in the end that wasn't a legitimate position to take, that black people could not be at the counter. And mm-hmm. to think that someone, if you take that argument right now and place it into the context of what's going on now, people justifying the discrimination against a group based on their religion or ethnic ties and justifying that through some kind of hatred, but saying that, you know, they have a legitimate leg to stand on, to me is just, I can't believe that Americans who believe in the Constitution think that that's okay.
Yeah, there's no I believe in the Constitution, comma, but.
Exactly.
And what's going on is you brought up the whole civil rights struggle in the 50s and 60s. It's interesting how this debate has come a whole 180 from it, and I'll tell you how I believe that. The struggle in the 50s and 60s was to get, you know, the federal government to pass laws to get some of these southern states to get their act together. So it was to push for laws that trumped public sentiment, because at that time, public sentiment was pro-segregation, pro-this, pro-that, pro-Jim Crow. Now they're saying, well, public sentiment is more important than the law.
Yeah, right. And they're definitely saying that. And I wanted to get your take, too. You know, I saw that the imam around the Park 51 project is now saying that everything is on the table. that he's willing to talk about certain things and make, I guess, certain concessions. For me, I guess I feel like I'm a little bit more militant on this issue than he might be. I feel like any concession in this discussion around that so-called World Trade Center mosque is a defeat, because once you make any single concession, you are inherently saying that there's, well, you're saying that there is something inherently wrong with people who believe in Islam, because that's what the folks on the other side say, is that this is offensive to us because people who were involved in Islam committed these horrendous acts on this day. So anything involving Islam is offensive to us. And then it makes that larger assumption that all folks involved in Islam are somehow going to be terrorists.
Right. As a civil rights organization, as a civil rights leader, that's kind of my gut reaction to say that, you know, we cannot and should not ever have to accept collective guilt. Those were 19 guys out of a population of 1.5 billion, and none of them were Americans, of course. And so we shouldn't accept collective guilt. And no one working or living in a neighborhood should have to worship somewhere else. It doesn't make sense. But I think if he does choose to move, it should be very loudly and clearly stated that, look, we're moving because it's not in the best interest of our congregation in terms of safety. I mean, that's the only thing you can draw the line in. You can't ever say, well, I understand how you might associate my faith with what happened two blocks away, because that would be just wrong. And the reason why I bring up safety is, I don't know if you saw some of these rallies at Ground Zero. We just had one on Saturday, of course, and then a few weeks before. Not to get too colorful, but if there wasn't any law enforcement there, it would have been a lynch mob.
I did see the one video of I don't know if he's African American or not, but he was a brown person, construction worker walking through the crowd,
right.
And they started chanting at him,
yeah.
And one guy even challenged him to a fight, and his reaction to me, the man who was walking through the crowds, was the reaction I would have had is like, look, I'm not Muslim, but what if I were? And what's the problem? You know,
exactly.
You guys are crazy.
Yeah.
And that's gotta be a scary thing, being confronted with that and then not knowing, just as a person who could be walking around, if you have something identifiably Muslim on, as far as some kind of garb, that people will point that out and think that you are somehow the enemy just because you wear something.
Right. We just had a story like that, I'll tell you. Again, it was an African-American sister who isn't Muslim, but she was wearing a headpiece that could have been confused for a Muslim headscarf. She was actually attacked on Saturday and was ripped off. She was physically assaulted.
Where
by
did this
somebody,
happen?
New York.
Wow.
Ground Zero. So some folks saw that. They associated that with Islam right away. When a group like that convenes, it's really dangerous for all minorities, not just Muslims, unfortunately.
No, and that's the thing, too. And again, with that construction worker, that was another part of the confusion. He had on an Under Armour silk cap on.
Exactly.
I mean,
right.
It's not even a kufi or anything else. I mean, that, again, to me, speaks to the larger part of the complete lack of knowledge of folks about Islam.
Right.
That anything that looks remotely like something that somebody Islamic might wear, then they're the enemy.
Right. Right.
And there's no, it doesn't seem to be any interest into clearing up that ignorance, which goes back to the part we started off with Tariq Ramadan, where, you know, he makes it seem like the ignorance is something that can be addressed kind of quickly or even effectively just because you try to address it. I mean, folks have been trying to address the ignorance of people in America for a long time.
Right. I mean, if you're surrounded by a mob about to get hurt, you don't have time to educate folks.
You can't pause.
Might have to punch your way out of that.
Exactly. Exactly. We're going to have to take a break in a second, man. I want to continue the conversation a little bit more. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the World Trade Center site. One of the things, I saw another interesting article this weekend in the New York Times that talks about how there was a prayer room, not quite a mosque, but a place for Muslims to gather and have prayer in the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if that existed, right, how can having a mosque near the World Trade Center somehow be desecrating the site of the World Trade Center?
You know,
hold that thought.
Right.
Hold that thought. We're speaking with Moeen Khawaja, Executive Director of Council on American Islamic Relations, the Pennsylvania chapter. We appreciate him for taking time to join us. Your phone calls are welcome. If you have any questions for our guests, feel free to call in any comments as well. 215-634-8065, 215-634-8065. We come back, we'll continue this, also a little bit of a history of Islam in this country and some other matters as well. We'll take this pause and be right back.
We've had a couple of extra troubles with accidents this afternoon, including one in Prospect Park. Now, and this traffic report is brought to you by Children's Advil. Prospect Park, Chester Pike at Madison Avenue. Police directing traffic around an accident. Some tied up traffic there. And another one up in Hatfield on Cowpath Road at Line Street. Again, police directing traffic there. Route 63 or maybe Route 309 look like pretty good alternates to that. If you're trying to go north on 476, the Blue Route, we're tied up from 95 to Baltimore Pike. Eastbound traffic slowing on the Schuylkill Expressway from 476 into Gladwin and then from Vine and through south. Westbound slow from the Boulevard to Belmont. Then from Gladwin out to the Conshohocken Curve. Still heavy north on 95 from Penn's Landing up through Allegheny and southbound from 420 down to the Commodore Barry. Southbound 42 is slowing from 130 to 295 again, slow south of 41, where an accident continues to block the right lane. Southbound 295 slowing from the White Horse Pike on down to 42. Nothing is proven to bring your child's fever down faster or keep it down longer. Children's Advil, relief you can trust. I'm Randy Chepigan with your Philadelphia area traffic.
This hot weather tip is from Global Home Improvement. Cut your energy bills with insulating windows and foam back siding. Call Global at 888-234-2929. That's 888-234-2929.
WURD is proud to represent the best of two-way talk radio. Our callers, guests, and hosts are among the best that the country has to offer. But what about our sponsors? We know we have the best restaurants, doctors, health food, and clothing stores, just to name a few, but who are your favorites? To answer that question, we're pleased to present the best of our best, your chance to nominate and vote for your favorite advertisers in several different categories. Just listen to the station all day and regularly visit www.900amwurd.com for your chance to participate in our Best of the Best contest. All participants and winners will be featured on the air and on our website. The best of our best, your chance to share with all of our WURD listeners your favorite advertisers and businesses. If you're not currently an advertiser on WURD and want to be considered for Best of the Best, just call 215-425-7875 and ask for our sales department.
This is Troy Aikman
and Hulk Hogan
for Rent-A-Center, where you can score big with great deals on brand name merchandise like LG HD TVs and more, all with no credit needed.
Penalty, hold him back.
What?
This is exciting, bro. Huge selection, no credit needed. Delivery and service included. And at Rent-A-Center, your satisfaction is guaranteed.
Do you know anything about football?
Three strikes and you're out?
This is a rental purchase transaction. See rentacenter.com for complete details and more information on the worry-free guarantee.
Hi, this is Sally Field. You may not know it, but osteoporosis runs in families. My mother has it, and now I have it. So my doctor started me on once-monthly Boniva. Boniva helps stop and reverse bone loss, so it's possible to do more than just stop bone loss.
Boniva Ibandronate Sodium is a 150-milligram prescription tablet for postmenopausal osteoporosis, CRAD, and Weight Watchers. Don't take Boniva if you have low blood calcium, severe kidney disease, or can't sit or stand for at least 1 hour. Follow dosing instructions carefully. Stop taking Boniva and tell your doctor if you have difficult or painful swallowing, chest pain, or severe or continuing heartburn, as these may be signs of serious upper digestive problems. If jaw problems or severe bone, joint, and or muscle pain develop, tell your doctor.
You've got one body and one life, so it's important to have strong, healthy bones. Ask your doctor if Boniva is right for you.
Boniva, help stop and reverse bone loss. For a free trial offer, call 1-800-4-BONIVA or visit boniva.com.
It's Al B. in the afternoon, exclusively on 900 AM WURD, your information station committed to solutions.
Everything I'm at, baby, everything I am.
الحكم الأول.
25 minutes past the hour, 5 p.m. here at 900 a.m. WRD. This is Al B in the afternoon. I'm your host, Al B. Happy to be here with you today, discussing anti-Islamic sentiment, not only in the United States, but around the world right now. And we're speaking with Moeen Khawaja, Executive Director of Council on American Islamic Relations, the Pennsylvania chapter. So we appreciate him for being with us. Again, Moeen, thank you again for joining us. Before the break, we talked a little bit about the World Trade Center actually having a prayer location for folks, for Muslims. And that being obviously destroyed when the World Trade Centers went down, it seems like, and also lives were lost. And there were people who were Muslims who died in the World Trade Center attacks. There was also a mosque in the Pentagon before, and it continues to be one now. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on and seeming hypocrisy around and the acknowledgement of lives lost, one, and then hypocrisy of saying that this is a country where you're supposed to be free to worship whatever you want, but not if it offends us.
Yeah, I was just at a really moving service with the governor on Saturday, and he reminded us that about 3 weeks after 9/11, there was a mosque that still exists about four blocks from Ground Zero, and they held a service for the 70 or so Muslims that died on 9/11, and there were all sorts of folks there. There were Muslims there, non-Muslims there, everyone of all stripes. Something has changed drastically. It didn't seem, I would have never thought 9 years later that we'd be having these conversations. I thought maybe 1 or 2 years afterwards we'd be saying, okay, that's not Islam, that's a group of terrorists. But somehow a narrative has taken hold amongst a big part of the population that Islam itself, the actual holy books and the teachings of Islam, led to this attack. And I have to tell you, that's, no one opened the Quran and said, hey, look, it says fly planes into buildings. I mean, that, but that is what a portion of the population believes in. It's really widespread ignorance.
Do you think that that was something that kind of has happened based on folks kind of being fearful and ignorant as a combination? Or do you think it's an actual tactic that's being played out by groups that would benefit from being able to exploit Muslims as a boogeyman?
Number two, I'll tell you what, we call it the cash and bash industry. There's a lot of money to be made because there's a market. There's a market of fearful people who are going to eat up this stuff. And so what we've seen emerge in the last 10 years. See, we thought the backlash to 9/11 would be 10 years, but to our dismay, it's taken 10 years to mature into select organizations, authors, media, an entire infrastructure devoted to smearing Islam and Muslims. We've got speakers who go on college campus tours talking about how Islam is going to take over the world. They write lots of books. They appear on media. They've got entire organizations. The key organization behind this Part 51 opposition was Stop the Islamization of America. It first started off as a blog, but then they got so many donations from the blog, they said, hey, let's just start an organization and produce these movements. So we've reached a critical mass of organizations, and what really concerns me is, you know, the war on terror could end, all this stuff could end, and we may not have a terrorist attack for the next 20 or 30 years, and American Muslims can be the best law-abiding, upstanding citizens, but you can have these organizations continually putting out this type of media. And it has to do with our age, with our day and age. You couldn't do this 20 years ago. Now you've got the internet, everyone has their own channel, basically. It's a good thing and also a bad thing.
Yeah. I guess that puts front and center what your, I guess, call to action is at this point. You guys have been around for a long time, but what do you see as your directive right now as far as dealing with this issue, wanting to be proactive, wanting to set the record straight, but also protect people?
Right. Like I said, the proactive stuff is going to be slower. So we really need to get, what we're trying to do is get all the mosques on the ground mobilized, telling folks to just open your doors, invite people, invite all your neighbors in. There shouldn't be a neighbor within 10 blocks of you that doesn't know about you. If you're a mosque in a neighborhood. You know, have those open houses and have folks come in and get to know their Muslim neighbors. That's obviously a much slower process. Now, when something bad happens, like a hate crime or something like that, we have to react, and we have to react hard with the force of the law. And so hopefully the law is going to be enough to protect Muslim civil rights. We haven't had any congressmen. Well, we have had a couple, I should say. But for the most part, there isn't any movement to say that Muslims aren't equal citizens and the Bill of Rights doesn't apply to them.
I remember one gentleman, I think, is he in Minnesota?
Yes, yes.
And I remember there being a controversy because he wanted to be sworn in on the Quran.
Exactly.
And people went ballistic.
Mm-hmm. The funny thing is, I mean, he didn't even use his Quran. He used Thomas Jefferson's Quran.
Yeah.
Of all things, right?
And again, and that to me is ironic because there are so many people, particularly these Tea Party folks, one of their favorite people to quote is Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
And they clearly don't know who he was. Because besides being an owner of other human beings, he also was quite outspoken about the institution of religion and the place it played in government and how it had no business in government.
Right.
And he had a lot of other views that are contrary to what the quote-unquote Tea Party stands for.
Yeah. Since you brought up the Tea Party, I think what we're seeing here is the emergence, and I'm sure this existed way before the Tea Party, but we have this emergence of this mythology amongst conservative right-wing white America that the forefathers were these Christian pure white men who had it all figured out, and somehow the whiteness, somehow your whiteness makes you more American. I'm really seeing a lot of racial undertones with this Tea Party stuff, and when they say things like, you know, we want our country back, well, that's the battle cry for we want to preserve the white status quo. I think they're just terrified that a half black president was even electable, let alone got elected. And so how does that translate into Islamophobia? This anti-Muslim stuff, it doesn't just happen in a vacuum. It's in the context of all these other things going on, like the election of the president and things like that. I think a lot of folks are frustrated that there is a black president, but what's one of the easiest things of Obama vilify? Well, it's the fact that he had a Muslim father, so let's go after that group, because going after his African sign might get us to be called racist, and you can't have that. But it's okay to be anti-Muslim, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's. I'm curious to get your take on this, too. You mentioned the president. One of the things that I've been outspoken critic about the president specifically on is the fact that he has his need to reinforce the fact that he's Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out and saying, you know, there's nothing wrong with folks choosing whatever religion they wanted to choose. I'm Christian.
Right.
But if they're going, and Muslims should be free to do what they want in this country, I'm Christian. In fact, I'm so Christian, you know, I get Christian prayers sent to my BlackBerry every day. You know, no one's more Christian than me, trust me.
Right.
But for me, I'd rather have him take the stance of, you know, my religion makes no difference. I don't know, you know, if I were Muslim or not, it would not matter one iota. I still would be the person I am, and I still would be an American. The fact that he feels the need to align himself with the Christian faith makes it leaves this kind of underlying current of I'm definitely not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're okay to be here. I'm not one of them. And it makes it seem like it's okay for folks who feel that way, like, well, he's trying so hard to be a Christian. There must be something wrong with being Muslim.
Right. Two things going on there. This wave of Islamophobia we see now, I really think started in 08 during the election.
Mm-hmm.
when it was, you know, you can't smear him, let's just start calling him a Muslim. Now, the 31% of Republicans who say he's a Muslim, I think it should be clear to him he's not going to get their votes no matter what. So why not just let them believe what they want to do? Just let them believe what they want to believe in. Now, he might have seen a poll where a few percentage of Democrats might think that, and as a first-year president, at the end of the day, you're still trying to work towards the second term. So, as a Muslim, you'd be surprised. He hasn't even stepped foot or even dared to think about stepping foot inside of a mosque. As you know, there were during the campaign, a couple of sisters with a scarf on were sitting behind, and his folks didn't want that media shot going up.
That was so ridiculous.
Muslims have actually, believe it or not, Muslims in America said, hey, you know what, we understand, get the guy elected.
Right.
That's how much we're willing to put up with stuff, you know. So I think even with his first term, we're willing to kind of, we're trying to understand that he's going to keep us at a bit of a distance. Now, he did take a huge step by supporting the mosque at Ground Zero and having the iftar. But we understand that a president ultimately gets averaged out by the public sentiment, and he's not really having the chance to show who he really is. We hope he can get a chance to do that during his second term.
That's interesting, too, because, you know, he makes that that speech, was it in Turkey? To the Muslim world. And
Cairo, I think.
In Cairo, yeah. In Cairo, he makes the speech, and he says, you know, this is who I am, and this is who the country is, and we want to open our arms and have better relations with you. And but some of his actions have gone, not deliberately counter, but have ended up going counter to what he's put out there. How are you doing on time?
Me, all. I'm okay. I can talk as long as you want to.
Okay, cool, because we have some people lined up who want to speak with you, and
sure.
I want to make sure we get as many people in as possible. We have time to go to the phone lines. Go to Jacob, who's first up in Center City. Hi, Jacob.
Peace be unto you, Brother Al, and to your guests. As-salamu alaykum to you.
Waalaikumsalam.
Yes. When it was first known that this man from Florida, that church, was going to have a burn the Quran day, I had to remind some of my Muslim brothers who came on the air not to let ignorance of people get you as Muslims worked up into a frenzy and act on emotion and do things that wouldn't reflect the sunnah, the traditions and character of Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, peace be upon him. Because, I mean, on this very airwaves, I heard some Muslims talking that, you know, it, to me, it was like fanning some flames. And I reminded these brothers that Allah says in the Quran that he, Allah, would protect this book. Mm-hmm. And that he don't really need our help, okay? Because in patience, I saw that, see, he said, they planned and I planned, and I'm the best of planners. Mm-hmm. Now, this man was talking about burning the Quran, but instead, on 9/11, all over the country, in churches and synagogues, they had to read the Quran day.
Absolutely.
See, but so through patience and wisdom, knowledge, don't get emotional. And this is what I was trying to tell my Muslim brothers who, in a way, to me, was trying to stir up, you know, you ready to, you know, punch a Christian in the mouth, you know,
mm-hmm.
for you know, and I was saying that if God, Almighty God, we call him Allah, if he wanted to make this man burst as a balloon with a pin, he could do that if he wanted to. You know what I mean? So, I mean, sure, we didn't like what was going on, but again, we shouldn't get worked up into a frenzy, you know, thinking that we have to do things that's not characteristic of the prophet of Islam, peace and blessings be upon him.
Jacob, let me ask you real quick. Have you gotten to a point at any time in the last, you know, 2-3 years as this kind of thing has ramped up? Did you ever feel that somebody was projecting something towards you because of your faith? Any kind of hate or any kind of animosity?
Not personal, because mm-hmm. I would take it as a teaching moment.
Well, I know how you would take it. I'm just asking, have you encountered it?
No, not really, because mm-hmm. I'm 6'5", 290 pounds, so I don't think they're going to really come at me. But one other thing, and no calling, no name, but one brother said, one of the sisters asked him, said, well, why don't Muslims go to churches and explain the religion of Islam better? Well, I don't go to church. I wouldn't go in a church, right? And he said this, not that I personally don't choose to go into churches. He made it seem like this is the religion of Islam, not to enter a church to do da'wah, you know. When, again, not only did we enter church, but when the prophet of Islam, peace and blessings be upon him, sent the Muslims to Abyssinia, that was a church land, right, brother?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, I mean, for us to take our personal feelings and promote them as Islam, I don't see that as a good tool either, you know?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Jake.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, you know, that's what I'd be listening for, and that's what, again, sometimes I have to, in my own way, try to counter this mystic thing that even some Muslims want to put down. I think some of my brothers want to see division, you know, and that's not good in this theme, so.
Thanks for your call, Jacob. I appreciate
it,
man.
Thank you. Peace.
All right. Moen, have you encountered a kind of hate that hate produced backlash amongst folks, followers of Islam, where they feel because there's so much hate that's been projected that they feel that they want to lash out physically or in some other kind of maybe less productive, but maybe in a way that would make they think they make them feel better?
You mean from Muslims?
Yeah, from Muslims saying that, you know, I want to lash out in some way, whether it be, you know, a blog against Christians or, you know, physically confronting folks. Anything like that?
I haven't heard that, but what the brother was saying doesn't surprise me at all. There's plenty of Muslims like that who let their emotions get to them. I want to say that still represents the minority. The majority of Muslims in America did only what they could, which is they said a prayer, they asked God to open his heart, to stop it, and as he said, look what we got. We got churches, synagogues, and mosques opening the doors, everyone coming together and joining their hands on 9/11 as Americans. Now, for the Muslims who are emotional, a lot of them, and you know, this is a problem in Philadelphia and America in general, a lot of Muslims don't know about their own faith. All you have to do is look at how our own prophet behaved. There's a very famous story. Every time he used to walk out in the morning, some lady would leave a whole bunch of trash on the sidewalk, so he'd have to walk on top of the trash. And this was every day for weeks and weeks. One day, there wasn't any trash. He goes up to the lady's house and says, "Are you okay? Are you sick?" And he was like, and he did find out she was sick, and he offered to get her medicine. That is the example of the prophet. We should be secure in our faith and understand everything's in God's control. And keep in mind, without an A, there's not a B. So if this pastor knew that no Muslim would react like that, or none of the media would care what he was going to do, he probably wouldn't have done it.
We made some references to the civil rights movement, African Americans in the 50s and 60s particularly. One of the things that happened during that, obviously, there was kind of a, basically, give or take, there were two camps. There was one that was more like the Martin Luther King, nonviolent resistance kind of thing. And there was also more the Malcolm X was more aggressive. If you come at me, you're going to lose your hand kind of deal. Do you find those kinds of divisions of thought as far as how to deal with this? Is it more unified? Where is the Islamic community on this? And realizing that, you know, that it isn't a monolith, that everyone isn't feeling the same way.
I think keep in mind, all of us are standing on their shoulders right now. Mm-hmm. So God have mercy on their souls, and we thank them for everything they did, both King and Malcolm X. Now, you know, as much as Muslims are going through, we absolutely have not gone through 1% of what some other minorities have gone through in America. So let me just make that clear with what's going on right now. It's really nothing compared to, when the government itself is against you, which was what was going on in the 50s and 60s, that's a whole new ballgame. So when I think Malcolm X was reacting to actual physical assault and not having this security to be able to sleep at night, thank God most Muslims have that security now. So we can react in more proactive, peaceful ways because our very physical being is not threatened on a regular basis as it was back then.
We have to take another break. When we come back, we'll continue with the phone calls. We have Barbara and Phil lined up next, and Moeen has been gracious enough to stick with us a little longer, so we'll continue the conversation. Right now, we do have to take a pause at about 15 minutes before the top of the hour. I'm Al Butler. We'll be right back after this.
A fair amount of volume and some extra delays around some accident scenes. This traffic report brought to you by Children's Advil. Heading south on the 42 freeway, we still slow approaching 130 on down to 295. Again, a little slow spot south of Route 41, an earlier accident off on the shoulder now, no longer blocking any traffic lanes anyway. South on 295, still pretty heavy from the Whitehorse Pike on down to 42. A lot of volume on southbound 73, generally slow from 295 in Mount Laurel all the way down to the Cooper Road traffic light in Voorhees. Eastbound Route 38, pretty slow at the Church Road Circle in Cherry Hill, just volume heavy. Heading in through there, too. Northbound lanes of 95, slow from the Ben Franklin up to Allegheny. Southbound from 420 down to the Commodore Barry Bridge. And the eastbound Vine Expressway has gotten heavier, slowing now from 23rd Street all the way into I-95. West on the Schuylkill, we slow from the Boulevard to Belmont, again Gladwin to the Conshohocken Curve. Eastbound tying up 476 to Gladwin, then from Vine through south. Nothing is proven to bring your child's fever down faster or keep it down longer. Children's Advil, relief you can trust. I'm Randy Chepigan with your Philadelphia area traffic.
Do you suffer from headache, fatigue, allergies, neck, back, and joint pains, or other unwanted health conditions? If so, make an appointment to see Dr. O. Ignoring symptoms can only lead to illness and shortened lifespan. Call Dr. O at 215-922-2242 to find out how chiropractic care can help you. Dr. O specializes in painless and thorough techniques to locate the cause of your problem. Because Dr. O knows every person is different, he incorporates chiropractic care, nutritional therapy, and massage therapy in his practice to help you reach your optimal health. Dr. O Family Chiropractic is located at 826 Christian Street in South Philadelphia. The path to total wellness starts here. So call Dr. O today at 215-922-2242. And as an added bonus, he'll give you 25% off your first massage. Call Dr. O today, 215-922-2242.
Vote for Nezzy's Bra Shop and visit the new location at 2601 South Mildred Street in South Philly. Get a bra that fits with no underwire. Ill-fitting bras cause yeast infections, fibroids, and calcium deposits. For more information, call 215-389-1376.
Hello, this is Louise Williams. If you're looking to save money on your energy bills, and I know you are, call my personal contractor, Global Home Improvement. Nothing will keep your home cooler on hot summer days than energy-efficient windows that qualify for the $1,500 tax credit. You wish you'd done these windows years ago. Call now, and Global Home will match the government tax credit for another $1,500 in savings. If you have high energy bills, you can't afford to wait any longer. These windows are going to save you up to 30% on your home energy bill. As always, Global Home specializes in all type of home improvements. They do roofing, siding, gutters, and of course kitchens and bathrooms. Call now for a free refrigerator whenever you remodel your kitchen, or a free upgrade to a jacuzzi style tub whenever you remodel your bathroom. So if you're tired of letting money fly out of the window, call my friends at Global Home Improvement. 888-234-2929. Online, globalhomeinc.com. Don't forget to tell them Louise Williams told you to call for another 10%. That's 888-234-2929.
Call 888-234-2929. And turn your house into the home of your dreams with Global Home Improvement.
It's Al B. in the afternoon, exclusively on 900 AM WURD, your information station committed to some.
Everything I'm at, baby, everything I am.
The top of the hour, 6 p.m. here at 900 AM WRD, and we've been spoken with Moeen Khawaja, Executive Director of Council on American Islamic Relations, and I'm glad he could join us today. Let's go back to the phone lines, and this time we have Barbara in Camden. Hi, Barbara.
Oh, hi, Al. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
And hello to your guests, to you and your guests.
Hello.
You know, in July, you announced on your program that there would be some free Korans. And I called to find out where and when, and you said you didn't know, but you would get back, you know, stated on the radio. And I haven't heard anything else about it.
Hmm.
You forgot?
Probably.
It was late July.
I do remember seeing the story on that, but we didn't have a lot of details at the time, but that they were going to make some available. I don't know what happened with that.
Was it council that your guest is affiliated with?
Sister, you're absolutely right. In response to the whole Burn the Quran thing, we wanted to do this regardless whether he burned them or not. We plan on distributing 200,000 free Qurans nationwide. And all you have to do is go to a website and sign up, and you'll be able to get one.
What is the web address?
The web address is Explore the Quran, spelled Q.
Wait a minute, 6-4?
Explore.
Six so, and four?
No, Explore.
Explore.
Yes, the word Explore.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Explore the Quran, spelled Q-U-R-A-N.
Is that .com, .net?
.com, right.
And just sign up for one?
Right.
You
just go to the website, and there's a space for you to request the Quran, and you should be able to get one in the mail. If you don't, I want you to go to pa.care.com, call my office, we'll get you one.
And your number, telephone number?
I'll just put it up out there, I guess. 215-592-0509.
Okay, well, thank you
all
so
right.
much.
No problem. Thank you, sister.
We appreciate that. There were people, I remember that, and I meant to follow up on that. I guess I did.
It's tough. I feel you on that.
All right. That was Barbara. Let's go to Phil, who's up next in North Philadelphia. Hi, Phil.
Hey, Albert.
Yes, sir.
Okay, you called me working. And good afternoon to your guests, too, man. This is real good. listen, from what I can see, the United States Muslims have demonstrated above and beyond the call of duty. They have shown this country what it is to be a human being made by Allah, the Creator. And they have already demonstrated. I think the opposition has learned their lesson. Don't mess with none of the books. You got me?
Yeah,
because I think we demonstrated it very peacefully. People from all across America, Jews, Baptists, they all sat up there, and I didn't like the guys out there neither. I never had a chance to speak out, but I didn't have to because everybody else, they did a pretty good job. And I think this has already set a precedent that don't mess with the book.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mess with the book because you're going to be in big time trouble.
Not just that, but just any book of God, which is,
I believe so. That's what it did. It opened up all of them. But what I really like about it is that it really brought Islam to the forefront even better now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just sort of in the shadows, wasn't quite sure, but we sure for sure now.
Mm-hmm.
Even Obama can be a Muslim now.
I don't know about that, Phil, because, he could be. He could be, and it'd be in his right. But I'm just saying, as far as I don't know if the country would be receptive to that idea. You see what's going on now. I think there would be a battle. I would love to see a demonstration from the president of embracing Islam and to back off a little bit of the Islam is fine, but I'm definitely a Christian kind of talk, because I think that ends up going counter to what he's trying to do.
Mm-hmm. And on the same token, I think the ideal statement from Obama would simply be what Colin Powell said. I'm a Christian, but what if I was a Muslim? It shouldn't be a problem. Just one sentence, Obama, that's it. Hopefully he can do that. And I want to make a comment to our brother Phil who called in. Thanks for having so much optimism in all this. We often forget that the media and what makes news is often a minority fringe story. People going to work, doing what they do is not news. So when you find some crazy fool with 50 followers doing something, that becomes news. But the truth is, the majority of America use this as an opportunity to show, I think, what America really is, what its promise is. And American Muslims really have stood up. I think we can do a lot more, and we will. But we've really stood up and showed that, the way to answer these things is through peaceful causes, like, sharing the Quran, opening your doors, interfaith, things like that. So thanks for viewing this in an optimistic light, Phil, and it's always good to turn everything into an opportunity.
Oh, definitely. If it's okay, I'd like to keep you for our first segment on the 6 o'clock side.
Okay.
A little bit longer. But
I'm having a good time.
Thanks. Good. I'm glad, and I think we're getting a lot out of this conversation. One of the things I was curious about, we've had several people call in and talk about it, and it's not talked about that much. People act as though Islam just showed up, you know,
right,
like September 2000, mm-hmm. you know, but Islam has been in this world, you know, the quote unquote new world for a long time. Talk right. a little bit about Islam and its history in the United States.
In a nutshell, it's huge. Islam has been here since before the United States even started.
Exactly.
Take a look at some of the Muslims right here in Philadelphia. They are the descendants of some of the very first slaves that were brought here. And some of them are the descendants of the Spanish explorers that came on the ships of Christopher Columbus. One of his captains was a Muslim. This isn't me finding some random thing on the online. This is actually on the record. So Islam has been here for quite some time, and a big part of it has been the African American struggle throughout since the Civil War. There was a big movement among African American identity psychology, talking about where we came from, things like that. We had movements like the Moorish Science Temple, Nation of Islam, and now they're moving more towards Orthodox Islam. In the 50s and 60s, a lot of European Muslims fled Europe for World War II. My parents came here in the 70s for a better life for me. I mean, Muslims have been here since the founding of the country. Thomas Jefferson himself had a dinner at the White House with Muslims. And I want to read, I actually have this on my computer screen, if you don't mind.
Sure.
In 1797, the United States government signed the Treaty of Tripoli, which was an agreement with some of the Muslim countries in North Africa. And it says this: as the government of the United States of America, we are not in any sense founded on the Christian religion, as it has in itself no character of enmity against the laws, religion, or tranquility of Muslims, and the United States never entered into any war or act of hostility against any Muslim nation. This is 1797. So the U.S. has been interacting with Muslims for a very long time. American Muslims have made positive contributions to America. The list goes on and on and on. 9/11 is not the history of Islam in America. It might be to some, but it's just not the fact.
Right, and I think that's important to underscore, I think if folks had a greater understanding, we'll talk about this a little bit more on the other side, mm-hmm. but one of the things that bothers me so much about what's happening in Tennessee, and I think it's Murfreesboro, Tennessee, where this mosque wants to expand from where they are. They need a larger building to accommodate the folks that are there, and it's being resisted by the community. In fact, someone set a fire to the construction site where they've already started to break ground on their new site.
Right.
One of the things that's bothered me so much about that place is that in Little Murfreesboro, Tennessee, that particular mosque has been in operation for 30 years.
Exactly.
Without incident, without mm-hmm. anything going on other than normal people just going and worshiping as they would at any other faith-based institution, wherever it was.
Right.
And now all of a sudden there's a problem because now people are afraid and planes have been stoked, and there's been a lot of fear-mongering from the right, obviously, and taking advantage and manipulating people who are already afraid of whatever, and they're giving them something to focus on.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk about that now?
I was taking that into the break, but that's just okay. One of the things that is frustrating for me.
Right.
And we talked about that a little bit on the other side, but to think that there have been folks here who have been doing, you know, minding their business, following their faith, for, you know, hundreds of years, literally, and now all of a sudden there's a problem, to me, just, it speaks actually kind of typically of America and that part of American history.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, it does. Oh, we got to take a break. When we come back on the other side, we have a few folks lined up. We'll get to them. They'll be our last three callers for our guest, Moeen Khawaja, Executive Director, Council on American Islamic Relations here at the Pennsylvania chapter. We appreciate him taking time to join us. We'll be back just on the other side. We have 6 o'clock news, a brief musical interlude, and we'll be right back in the conversation. I'm Al B. Al B in the Afternoon. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to 900 AM WURD.
Fiddler here. We're continuing our conversation with Moin Khawaja, Executive Director, Council on American Islamic Relations. We appreciate him for joining us. Let's go back to the phone lines and speak to Safiya calling from Olney. Hi, Safiya.
Good afternoon, Al, and assalamu alaikum to your brother.
Why the fun?
You know me. I'm the Safiya with the case in the office.
Oh, nice to hear from you again.
Yeah, that one. I don't know. I think you kind of have a rather optimistic view of things. I personally think that it's not so much that the Islamophobia has just surfaced recently. I think it's always been there. It's just that when you have times of crisis like now, and prior to this back in the early 80s when you had the whole situation with the, you know, people being held hostage in Iran, that all the people who hate us, they have the opportunity to come out of the closet. It becomes acceptable. And, you know, that's been my experience. Because I had a much worse time back then than I do now. Back then, I would walk down the street with my children, and people would holler obscenities at me, et cetera. I think that all the sisters catch the brunt of it because these people tend to be rather cowardly. So they wouldn't necessarily confront a man, but they feel comfortable with confronting a woman.
Right. Sorry, go ahead. Are you finished?
Yeah, well, I mean that's the way, you know, I see it, but then on the other hand, I was very pleasantly surprised on 9/11. I went to an interfaith service, and it was just so just loving, and it was beautiful, and, you know, it gave me, like, a new faith in that this country isn't as bad as I personally thought it was.
I think what you're saying with your experiences, Safiya, is, you know, I think a lot of Muslims can, and not just Muslims, but minorities or Americans in general can say the same thing. We've had all sorts of experiences, both very uplifting experiences and some very frightening ones, too. And that's a picture of America. It's not just one big thing. It's not always good or bad. I think what it comes down to is this. Good people are going to react to challenges in a good way, and bad people are going to react to challenges in a bad way. So does a bad person already have that potential to be Islamophobic? Of course. But I think that same person probably hates other minorities as well. I don't think it's just limited to Muslims only. And so those are the expressions we're seeing. We're seeing the good folks come together on the anniversary of 9/11, holding hands together in interfaith groups and doing joined Quran and Bible readings, and then we've got the bad folks burning Qurans. And so, you know, it comes down to what's in your heart to begin with.
Yeah, I wonder about that. I understand it. When you have the reactions, as you said, one of the things you learn is that, you know, good people will react one way and good people react one way, bad people react another way in the same context. One of the things I get concerned about is I feel like there's some people who are in neutral.
Yeah.
And one of the things that can push a person out of neutral is fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people, let me rephrase that, not people, but powers that be, whether they're the Glenn Becks of the world or other people who may be running for a particular office, keep pushing this fear out there because they know that they can get someone who might not necessarily have a feeling about a particular group, but kind of have this feeling of things are going against them. They're not quite sure who to blame, but given someone to blame, they can turn the blame on.
Right.
And I think if they were given another way to go, they might go that way as well. Now, I'm worried. I think those people that would hate are always going to be there. I'm worried that there's a larger pool of people who are kind of in the middle who can be manipulated one way or the other, and the folks who will push the hate agenda are winning that.
Well, that's a good point. I apologize for simplifying so much. It definitely isn't a black and white, good versus bad thing. The majority is actually neutral. What I meant by good and bad were the actual shepherds, if you will, the leaders in the politics and media who know that they have this huge neutral pool to kind of mess with, right? Or lead, of course, if you want to lead them the right way. A good example is, like, I don't think the folks who were showing up to this protest and protesting Islam in America, saying that Islam is here to take over. I truly believe a lot of them sincerely believe that. I don't think they're just there just to say that. They probably really sincerely believe it and fear it because they're hearing it from people they trust. They're hearing it from the media personalities they trust, from the politicians they trust, and sometimes even the religious leaders that they trust, right? So that's very true. I'll give you an example. Fox, of course, Fox News was having a huge fear-mongering fest about all the mosques being built in all of America, not just Ground Zero. They even said things like, oh, Ground Zero, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Just check out all these mosques.
Here they come.
Exactly. And they were just insinuating that all these mosques are like Al-Qaeda training camps. And if you trust Fox, you're going to believe that. So this was 2 days before that Tennessee mosque was set on fire. And on that Fox segment, they had the actual blueprints of that Tennessee mosque. They had maps of the construction site. Here's Fox News doing that 2 days before. Again, 2 days after, somebody set the place on fire. So we can't prove the cause and effect there, but, you know,
that's not a stretch either.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not a stretch. It's definitely a correlation. And so for that neutral majority that's on the fence, we have to be those of us in leadership positions in the media and politics. We have to be very careful. And the guys who are in politics, I think they know what the real thing is. And so when you are deliberately misleading folks to think Islam is going to take over the world, that's just evil. That's evil on your part. The person that follows you may not necessarily be evil. He might just not know any better.
Can you do me a favor? We're about to take another call, but before I forget, can you email me that piece that you found from, what was it, 1791?
Yes. Yes, I'll do that.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that because that's something I definitely want to refer to from time to time.
Okay.
Let's go. It's 15 minutes past the hour, 6 p.m. We go back to the phone line, speak to Nails. Nails in Germantown.
Peace to you, both of you brothers. I just have a comment.
Sure.
I'm a little, a little confused, a little upset. I'm sitting down watching, showing my grandkids different things throughout history. Mm-hmm. I show them Roots, which was a horrible thing. I show them Rosewood. I show them the Great Debaters. And they see all the atrocities that Christians bestow upon black people with no regret, no remorse, looking to do it some more. And they say, well, Papa, why don't we fight back? Why don't we do something about it? Where are they sorry at? I mean, like, there's no sensitivity there. There is nothing that these people have done to us, that they show us any sympathy whatsoever. I believe the Constitution says that you have religious freedom. If they want to build a mosque, they can build a mosque. Who cares about what they're sensitive about? At no time in history have I ever seen any sensitivity showed to black people. They deprive us of work. They discriminate against us today. They do atrocities today in the name of Christianity. I mean, somebody needs to stand up and say, when are people going to fight back? When are you going to have self-defense? When is somebody going to say something that's real instead of dancing around what's completely obvious? These people ain't nothing but bigots and racists and mean nothing but harm, a bunch of hypocrites. And these are the most evil people in the entire world, ever walked the planet. And I'm trying to keep it toned down. I'm really not going to say what I want to say, but these are some horrible people. And the law says they have a right to build that, and there is no discussion because the law says sensitivity. Every day I walk out this door, I get smacked in the face with racism, and I got to deal with it. I can't even explain to my grandkids why black people haven't fought back. The Indians fought back. What can I say about us? What do? We take this shit. We don't even stick together.
I hear you. No more. I understand. I appreciate your passion, and I also want you to watch your language. But I understand where that sentiment comes from, because there is a long history, and I feel it too, of that oppression. It's been against every group that you can name that has been here either before Europeans got here or since. There's been a focus of hate, and as we alluded to earlier in the program, a lot of that hate came from the actual government construction. You know, they put it in, they built it in to the framework of the country that those kind of things were going to take place. I agree too that that's another reason why I have a problem with the imam backing down at this point, is because we see example and example and example again of when things are done in order for, you know, working class Americans, quote unquote, which seems to be a new code word for white people, or for mainstream America, that's when things are done that would offend their sensibilities, everyone's up in arms. But if it offends the sensibilities of a smaller group and mainstream America is called a task for it, they say, get over it. What do you want? I mean, and one of the things that sticks in my mind is the situation with the Washington Redskins. You know, people time and time again will say, well, I'm not offended by that. You know, the Indians just need to get over that. But if you knew the history of what goes into the Redskin name and what it meant to collect red skins, then you might have some sensitivity to that. But it doesn't offend their sensibility, so it's all good. But you build a mosque, now you're offending my sensibilities, now it has to get shut down.
Right. That frustration is understandable. The groups of people that have been run over the most are told to, as you said, deal with it, get over it. And the people that have been privileged get offended left and right for just about everything. I mean, mm-hmm. to draw the same analogy on the mosque in New York, imagine saying, hey, you know what, you can't build this church in the South because the KKK made life hell for so many black people in the name of Christianity in Georgia, so no churches in Georgia. I mean, we don't even fly. I mean, you would be shown the door in a split second if you said that. But the fact that we even entertain the thought that we're even having this debate.
That's my problem. And that's my biggest problem with this whole thing, is that the other side of the argument has been given some level of legitimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be shown the door right away. And not even be entertained, and it should be covered that way. And the fact that they keep covering it as if this is a legitimate sign of argument, well, you know, what about their sensibilities and their feelings? I'm not saying that people don't have feelings that don't need to be respected in some regards. This ain't one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's one of the things that really bothers me. Well, Wayne, thank you so much for your time, man. I really appreciate it. We have to have these conversations more often.
It was a lot of fun. Let's do it again.
Definitely, definitely. How can folks who want to get more information, how can they reach out to your organization if they want to invite you out to speak to their group, whatever? How can they get in contact?
So check out our website. We're at pa.care, spelled CAIR.com. That's Council on American Islamic Relations. We love dialogue. We need to have more of it. We need to reach out and learn from each other. That's what it's all about.
You guys are right downtown, too.
We are. We are.
Okay. And what's the phone number?
215-592-0509. And you can email us at info@philadelphia.care.com.
Great. Thanks, man, again for your time. I really appreciate it. And we look forward to talking to you in the future. And again, if there's anything that you feel like we need to know about that's developing that we may not be aware of, feel free to reach out to us.
Absolutely. We'll do that.
Thanks, man. Have a good one. That's Moeen Khawaja. We appreciate him. He's the executive director of the Pennsylvania Chapter Council on American Islamic Relations. We appreciate him taking the time out today and spending extra time beyond what we had originally scheduled. So appreciate that. Well, we have time to take a couple more calls. When we come back on the other side after the Tanya Hart, hopefully we'll be speaking with Beasley Reese. So right now, let's go to Dave in North Philadelphia. What's